This episode of the Cannabis Maker Podcast is brought to you by Lost Coast Wellness, based out of Humboldt County, California. Grow your own medical cannabis according to your DNA. Visit lostcoastwellness.com for more information about their event retreat from the 30th of July to the 1st of August. Use promo code CANNABISMAKER for a $25 discount on in-person packages and promo code VIRTUALMAKER for a $10 discount on virtual packages. Lost Coast Wellness. Products from certified organic hemp, free from THC, pesticides, and solvents. Visit their Instagram or website for more information today. LostCoastWellness.com. Lost Coast Wellness.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Cannabis Maker, episode number 16. We're back at it again. It's been a long, interesting week the past week, and we're here again on a Monday. We're joined with Eystein, myself, Liam, Corey is with us, and we've got an amazing guest lineup for everybody today, and that is Mr. Andre Nielsen, who's got a lot of work with Normal in Norway. We'll get right on to it and let Andre introduce himself to everybody and give a little bit of an introduction. Andre, how's it going today?
I'm good. As I said, the sun is shining in Bergen, Norway, on the west coast of Norway. So that always brightens my mood. My name is Andre Nielsen. I am the chair of the board of the Norwegian chapter of Normal, which I'm sure everybody here is familiar with what kind of organization that is. We are a Norwegian NGO who works within the field of drug politics and policies. And we work with promoting the rights of the cannabis user, interests of cannabis users and people who use cannabis, cannabis patients. And we're basically trying to raise awareness of the struggles that users of cannabis live with in Norway, with prohibition, with punishment as the mean from the government to meet people who use cannabis illegally. And most important, I would say, we're trying to fight the stigma against cannabis users and cannabis use. My reason for going into this field is, there's different layers, I would say. I have user experience, as they say. I have experienced what it's like to live as a user of cannabis with prohibition being the regulated form in Norway. I've been punished by the government for using cannabis or possessing cannabis. And I've also traveled around in different places in the world, mostly the Netherlands with Amsterdam, and I've lived in California a couple of times. And the first time I went to California about 10, 11 years ago now, it really made me realize that the culture, or the way the culture meets people who use cannabis, or the degree of acceptance that cannabis use has in the culture, really affects behavior, and also I would say the physical health, but also the mental health of users. So it became a really important cause for me to fight stigma, because I sincerely believe that the high levels of stigma against users of cannabis and cannabis use in Norway has serious harming effects. That's what I'm trying to do.
Thanks so much, Andre, for that little introduction and the breakdown as well. I think what you spoke on and what you touched on kind of comes into a lot of what we've been talking about so far on the Cannabis Maker in the past couple of sessions. You know, we've had conversations about decriminalization versus legalization. How do you start breaking down the stigma? How do you even approach, you know, people in government positions when you want to talk about this openly and honestly? I think one thing I really kind of wanted to just get for the people listening in, because a lot of people don't know this, you know, I got to say, you hear a lot of the time, Norway is amazing, progressive, the education is top, people are doing great there. But when you really look at, especially what you touched on, you know, cannabis being punished by the government as a cannabis user, having that stigma around being a cannabis user in Norway, and we should also say cannabis consumer in that sense, you know, what is it that you're seeing at the moment is kind of the general consensus around cannabis? What's the situation in Norway? You know, give us a bit of a, I think Corey likes to call it a field report. So I'd love to hear that, and for people in the audience as well, what is it like right now in Norway with cannabis?
I would say it's fairly divided. I don't have like the exact demographics lined up here, but I would say that the generation that are like 40 plus and upwards, there's still a fair amount of stigma attached to cannabis use. We have a long tradition in Norway with prohibition, with stigma, with stigmatizing, the government actively trying to punish and stigmatize use of cannabis, and it has serious roots. Especially in the adult population. At the same time, you see a tiny shift. We have, I can't remember the exact number right now, but we have several big parties in Norway that compete for power, and we also have a coalition government. And among these parties now, two out of eight approximately are for legalizing cannabis. And this is very recent that they made it their formal platform going into the election. I'm not sure they would speak too highly or too loudly about it in this election, but it's now part of their official platform. So that's a good thing. With the population 25 and younger, I would say there is a big, big shift when it comes to how people view cannabis use in the right direction. There's much more openness. Younger people tend to have, there's just less stigma attached to cannabis use within the younger population in Norway. But unfortunately, the people in power, the majority of the political specter is still for prohibition, and as recent events in Norwegian drug politics have shown, there's still a lot of stigma towards not only those who consume cannabis, but consumers of all illegal drugs. So there is a shift in Norway, and it's coming faster and faster. But at the time being, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can definitely start to understand that when we look at, like you said, with a long-standing tradition around it. You know, it's, when you speak about it, I get reminded a lot about the situation I've seen in Germany, and it very much tends to be, you know, a population that is quite static, and it takes quite a long to change opinion. So absolutely. I just, one thing that stood out on that kind of stigma, one part I really wanted to address is, I know there's the stigma around cannabis, but how is it currently being approached with medical cannabis? I know we've been doing a lot of work with medical cannabis from other countries, but what is it like right now in Norway? Are you seeing a bit more of a medical cannabis use being in focus?
Definitely. I would say that there is far less skepticism in the general population when it comes to using cannabis as medicine. I would say moods have changed drastically, even though you will still find those who will say that cannabis shouldn't be used as a medicine or don't believe in the medicinal effects. But I would say in general, the larger population is more and more for cannabis as medicine. With that being said, the situation for patients who need cannabis medicine in Norway is it's not good at all. We have very limited access to medicinal cannabis in Norway, and by state law, it's limited to very few patient groups. We're talking late stage cancer, chronic physical illness, and I believe MS patients, and even for these patient groups, they have to have tried everything else within the pharmaceutical option range before cannabis can be approved for them. So it's very limited access for a limited amount of people, and it's really expensive. We have a good healthcare system in Norway. The government subsidizes a lot of the medicine that you need, but cannabis is not included in this arrangement, so patients have to pay full price. There are some ways to get around this. We have something called the Schengen Agreement. Basically, you can go to, I believe, every EU country, European Union country, that has legalized medicinal cannabis. You can get a prescription from a doctor there, get it from a pharmacy abroad, and then bring it back home to Norway. But again, that's really expensive. You don't get any refund, and you have to pay taxes when you cross the borders with a certain amount. I believe it's 80 grams of flour and upwards, then you have to pay taxes on top of what you've already spent. And there are also cannabis patients are being discriminated against when they are given the prescription legally, or when it gets known that someone has gone abroad and gotten a prescription, they will almost automatically lose their driver's license. No questions asked. And this is, well, to anybody who knows how cannabis affects you behind the wheel, it's an absurd law. People build up tolerance, etc. And for someone using cannabis daily, it doesn't affect you as it would someone who uses it once a year. And what's really lost for better words interesting about this is that if you look at other medicines that can affect your driving, such as opioids or benzodiazepines, you can lose your driver's license immediately when you get these kind of medications, but after a while you get it back because it's accepted that users build up tolerance. And if they, for example, only have an agreement to use it at night or not before driving. So these exceptions don't exist for cannabis patients for now. And that's something that I know for sure is very harmful to those who get cannabis as medicine, because, as you all can imagine, if you've been using, for example, opioids over time for chronic illness, you know that opioids can be effective in some cases for a certain period of time to ease pain. But it also comes with side effects when we're talking about long-term use. And I've spoken to a lot of cannabis patients who have told me how their lives got way better. Increase of life quality when they got their cannabis medicine, and then the government takes away their driver's license, which reduces their mobility in their everyday life, and suddenly it's like another wave of depression that can hit you because of this. So it's a serious situation. I do feel like some politicians are waking up to this fact, but still, we have a long way to go.
Yeah, thank you for giving that little that explanation there. I can see you, especially it comes to difficult, difficult arguments, especially when we look at stuff like driving and the way that medical cannabis has an influence on people's driver's license in Norway. What I'm saying is, like, we've seen in other countries like the Netherlands, I take this example because I find it quite interesting there. We have the government who, you know, they're on that same stance as Norway, you know, driving under the influence of anything is definitely a big no. and cannabis also not, even though it's medical. And then we have the health ministry in the Netherlands that actually says, based on their research, their findings, how they evaluate it, you know, this exception where if you've consumed medical cannabis for 2 weeks and you're used to its effects in that sense, then you're okay to drive. But this is the really interesting disparity that we have between the health ministry and the government, you know, within that one system. And seeing in Norway, I think we're going to hopefully have another way for patients to be able to have that right, because it's absolutely, like you said, if you have an improvement in your life quality but a reduction in mobility, is that, you know, that trade-off, what are you doing with it? And I think it's keeping a lot of Norwegian patients from being able to have that real freedom and access that they should have as a medical cannabis patient. So thank you for bringing that to attention as well, because not a lot of people know that, you know, in a lot of states, even in America, it's not necessarily linked together. You show your driver's license to be able to get medical cannabis. So it's kind of this really interesting conundrum that we have over here in the European, Scandinavian, the Schengen kind of area. I don't know if Øystein or Corey had any questions at this point as well. I think we were really touching on some interesting topics. And one thing that came up a lot when I asked questions as well in our Telegram chat and what people kind of want to know about is, are there any lobbying efforts at the moment going on with cannabis in Norway?
Yes, there are. Well, my organization are doing our fair share. I know that there have been some medicinal cannabis providers that are trying to enter the market in Norway. And I know of other organizations that are promoting important ideas around cannabis to politicians. I don't know of any industry actors doing this, but I would suspect that it also happens, but I don't think it happens enough or in a large enough scale. I would just, I'd like to add, when it comes to driver's license routines, if you get caught by the police for using cannabis, and you admit to the police that you sometimes use cannabis 10 times a year or more, they can also automatically take away your driver's license. This has been something that's been criticized by even official. Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. Well, we actually have a law. It's called, I don't know what it would translate directly into in English, but let's call it, I think the right thing is the sobriety law. It states that people has to be sober in their everyday life, more or less sober to inhibit or have the right to have a driver's license. So if you have a problem with alcohol and you tell your doctor, the same thing can happen, but the bar for taking away cannabis, people who use cannabis, their driver's license is immensely lower for those compared to other users of other illicit drugs. And I believe it's based on the idea of how THC can be traced in your body for weeks after using. So at some point, authorities imagine that this will also affect people's ability to drive a vehicle for up to several weeks after using.
Yeah, no, I like that you specifically say that the authorities imagine this, because that's obviously not fact-based. Your first question that you asked me when you so graciously had me on your podcast was, you know, so I want to ask you, Corey, has Canadian society broken down since legalization? And so, you know, everything is going fine up here. There's, you know, definitely consumption of cannabis happening within what would be considered dangerous timeframes in your country. But we're not seeing any correlation of the legalization of cannabis increasing drug influenced deaths in the country. So, you know, the numbers are, the facts are there, but again, it's the impression of what might happen is seemingly really getting carried away in Norway, you know. And I asked specifically about the, you know, alcohol comparison, because I'm well aware of how much Norway loves their alcohol. So it's just, it's kind of interesting to see the different handling of the two situations, and just the, you know, the clear destruction that one of those substances causes and the other one doesn't. It's very bizarre in how they can be treated the same or even spoken in the same conversation. And so it seems that they're, you know, we had a interesting conversation with a few women representing, you know, some of the Soviet bloc countries the other day, and they mentioned one of their huge hurdles to cannabis legalization is actually more likely going to be first through police reform. And so it kind of stuck out to my head because I've never heard of that before. But, you know, circling to our conversation today, do you think it's necessary that, you know, some other major reform needs to happen in the country before you can fully take on, you know, the decriminalization fight that you're doing in Norway? Because it seems that the attitudes are extremely entrenched and it's, you know, a little bit more difficult than some other places. So I'm kind of interested to hear your perspective on that.
Yeah. First and foremost, me asking you about whether society in Canada had broken down was obviously me playing with the fact that a lot of prohibitionists in Norway act like that's that would be the outcome if cannabis were legalized, and some of these ideas are so far from fact-based that you can get depressed just by trying to process their logic, and sometimes humor and irony is the only thing keeping us alive here. But when it comes to, let me just give an insight to people who don't follow Norwegian drug politics on the front row. For the last years, it's been debated in Norway. You, Øystein, have probably brought it up on this podcast before, so forgive me if I'm repeating this, but it's been debated whether we should decriminalize use, possession, and buying illegal drugs for personal use. And the government even proposed this a couple of years ago, and they researched whether using punishment as a mean to reduce illegal drug use and drug-related problems, what kind of effect punishment have, or and does it prevent these things. In short, the research showed that you cannot state the fact that you cannot state that punishment reduces use or drug-related problems, and in fact, it does more harm than good. And stigmatizing users, which it is meant to do, also creates a lot of harm on both individual and societal levels. And this was voted in, I don't know what the term for Stortinget is in Norway, but it's where all the political parties come to vote on major political issues. And unfortunately, decriminalizing will not happen this round. Three major parties voted against. They voted for continuing to punish people who use illegal drugs. And so it shows that on the political spectrum, there's still the conservative opinions still stand strong, unfortunately. And it is very entrenched. It's a very divided debate. A lot of people have strong opinions, and it's been a heated debate. But out of this debate has come something close to a police reform. And just to answer your question first, yes, I think some other major change has to happen before people can digest the fact that cannabis should be legal to consume for adults. First and foremost, the police has been very involved in the political debate on whether we should decriminalize use and possession and buying of illegal drugs for personal use. The police have obviously their right to have an opinion on a matter, but it's fairly special, or I don't know how the police enters political debates in other countries, but I find it very strange.
Yeah, I wanted to just clarify that really quickly, because, you know, we did have some, you know, meetings with some of the police chiefs of, you know, representing different countries, but they met with parliamentary committees that were, not necessarily off the record, but you necessarily wouldn't really see that happening. It's more of how, you know, the sausages are made, I guess, in laws and how politics work here in Canada. So, you know, they definitely were asked some questions, but they were not actively taking a stance. You know, the Toronto police chief, for example, our largest city here in the country, he didn't go up there and say, "Hey, federal government, what are you doing? Stop legalizing cannabis." You know, nothing of that sort of sort. It's all done in kind of backdoors consultations with the parliamentary folks that are trying to craft these laws. So that, yeah, I don't know if that, it sounds like what's happening in Norway is a little bit different. As you can tell, I'm a little bit taken aback. I'm, you know, very familiar with like a Department of Justice type of thing, or, you know, in that kind of federal sense or national sense, as the, you know, Department of Justice or whatever branch that may be. I know, you know, they'll have sort of a say, but this is a very interesting point, I think.
Yeah, so they did that also. There's the Department of Justice, and I would guess it's normal when you're trying to make a major political change to ask public sectors their opinions or have them give inputs. But at the same time, the police has been very visible in the public debate, and from all around the country. And there's also this lobby organization containing people who work in the police and in the military and other criminal-related jobs, criminal-related, but they are not officially representing the police, but they have police in their name. It's called the Norwegian Drug Police Organization. So in the public, there's been a lot of confusion about whether this organization represents the police or not. The police and themselves have been tried to be clear that they do not represent the police, but at the same time, they have shown up on different events with police uniforms, creating a lot of confusion. And I would say that everybody who, every smart person would recognize that they do this on purpose in order to gain, I would say, political authority. But the point here is that even though that's problematic in itself, the police have spent a fairly amount of time saying that if the government were to decriminalize the use of illegal drugs, the police would lose a lot of important measures when it comes to fighting illegal drug use. Such as searching of homes, searching cell phones, frisking. They make people, they undress people and check their, their ass, anus, cavities, I don't know. There's some really, really intriguing measures the police use to discover whether a person has used illegal drugs and to find out who they got it from. So they've been making a big issue, big statements saying that if the government decriminalizes, they would lose these ways of fighting illegal drug use. So the state attorney made it very clear a couple of weeks ago, the 9th of April this year, in a letter that he wrote to all police branches in Norway, explaining that this is in fact illegal searches. If a person is only suspected of using or possessing illegal drugs for personal use, these are not measures that you should take or is legal to take, because you know, the way you investigate a crime has to stand in measurement to the crime you're investigating. And these are petty crimes. So now what the reality is that, and this might seem a little complicated, but if we had decriminalized, the police would no longer need the evidence to suspect of someone of using or possessing illegal drugs. Signs and symptoms would be enough, and they would then make the person suspected of this go and meet with a health board to go and get access to resources if you need treatment or information about illegal drugs and the possible harms and so forth. So they would actually need less evidence to suspect someone of breaking the law. But now that we haven't decriminalized, police have lost measures that they used to take because the state attorney has proclaimed it as illegal. So now the only way to be convicted of these crimes is when the police are actually catching you while you're using an illegal drug, or if you admit it yourself that you have used an illegal drug, or if they find illegal drugs on you, because they can still stop and search and check your pockets and so forth. So it's not an official police reform, but I suspect that going forward, we're going to see, less cases of the police actually breaking the law when they're trying to investigate illegal drug use cases.
Yeah, I think you got both of us, all three of us there. I mean, Øystein kind of probably already knows this as well, but myself and Corey are probably definitely here thinking, wow, okay, that's interesting. I really, really appreciate you explaining it to us, Andre, because I think as well the people in the audience here as well maybe got a bit of a wake-up call. The people listening in is like, this is what it's like in Norway right now. And it's a very, very interesting situation to be in. I think when you say that if you were to decriminalize it, the police would need less evidence to suspect you of breaking the law, this is like a parallel that we have. I don't know if we've seen it anywhere else. Maybe Corey can chime in on that one. But that is definitely an interesting kind of conundrum to have and to see this, you know, bringing up that topic of police reform. Having that one first, we had it in another room. This is a really, really interesting approach.
Let me just add that that what we're also talking about is not only searching your home or searching people's cell phones. It's also forcing people to give urine or blood samples to test whether they have, in fact, used an illegal drug. And Norway is one of the few countries, I can't remember which other countries, but there are a few other, that actually has prohibited and that in fact punishes use in itself. So they you don't have to be in possession of illegal drugs before this was known by before the state attorney made it clear that these things were illegal to force someone to give urine and blood samples. They would maybe see that, okay, you have red eyes and your friend got caught with a joint while you were hanging out with him. And unless you admitted to have smoked a joint yourself, the police could force you or said that they could force you into giving blood and urine samples. And this has happened to a lot of people. This is still legal in cases where the police suspect that people behind the wheel are intoxicated. But that's one of the very few cases where it's still legal to do.
I'm so amazed. Every time I have a conversation about Norway, I find a new fact that just makes me nearly speechless. And for all of those people who know me and have followed me on this podcast for a little bit, putting me out of words is quite the thing to do. I'm shocked. I think it really tells a story as well about, really how courageous Canada really was and just really stood up for everything and came out, you know, guns blazing. I'm shocked and amazed that nobody in Norway, you know, brought this to a point where there was a lot of people behind this movement. You had to have somebody in the government involved to really comment on the situation and really see some movement. So I think it's a really telling situation for everybody to, you know, really understand also, you know, how much energy that some of the medical patients or folks with cannabis or using cannabis in Norway really have. It seems like it's an exhausting situation, Andre.
It is. And as I said, for example, access to medicinal cannabis in Norway is very limited. So obviously you have a fair amount of users and consumers that are self-medicating, that are reporting to using cannabis illegally for their anxiety issues or depression or sleep deprivation and PTSD and so forth. And then you have the government still, even though this government tried to make a change, still pushing for politics that are intrusive, that are re-traumatizing people who use illegal drugs, also included cannabis. It's a very gloomy situation. And for those that hasn't really experienced this firsthand, there's still a lot of people in Norway that don't view this as harmful politics. A lot of people admit that obviously it's unpleasant to be put in handcuffs, to be undressed and put in a cell in custody while you're waiting for a fine of maybe $1,000 in Norwegian kroners, 10,000 Norwegian kroners for possessing two cannabis joints, which I myself have experienced and have spoken openly about, even on national television. The majority of feedback that I got was that young people sitting and watching this with their parents, they were actually shocked. They didn't know that this was going on. They didn't know that was how they did it. But they all had accepted the fact that use should be illegal and users should be punished to prevent others from doing it. While there has been a great change in the general population, I think, and I think the politicians and the political parties that voted against decriminalizing, they were just scared. This is an election year, and they didn't want to take the risk of losing voters to other parties. So they went against the reform in hope that they would get them more voters if they were against it. And while I think this was not an accurate analysis of the general opinions in the broader population, there's still people who say that because in addition to being, well, the chair of Normal in Norway, I have a private engagement when it comes to promoting ideas surrounding drug policies. And I'm on basically every social media platform from TikTok to Instagram. And I get a lot of feedback, a lot of good feedback, a lot of supporting feedback. But also there's a scary amount of people out there who say that let the police do their job. They know what's best. If they want to force you into giving a urine sample or blood test, you should just let them do it. If you haven't broken the law, you shouldn't really be scared to do that, which is, for me, it's the most naive way of thinking about authority and those in power, that not only criticizing authorities, but just knowing what rights you have is somehow seen as police hate or confrontation, which I find almost disturbing. And I, as you said, going into this, Norway is in many ways a great country to live in. We have a great amount of equality, even though that's something that gets slightly worse year by year. We have a good healthcare system. We have a good welfare system. And a lot of things are going great in Norway, and we have low rates of crime, low rates of serious crime. And I think this has created almost an false sense of security when it comes to viewing authority, that they know that the authority always knows best, and as citizens we should just stay in place and accept the way society is, and that's that. Obviously there's a lot of people that don't think like that, but there's disturbing amount do say that, yeah, you shouldn't really be enlightening people about their rights, you should just let the police do their job, they're good people basically. So yeah, it's kind of scary.
So I have a lot to say about that police thing, but I wanted to give a quick currency exchange for everybody. 10,000 Norwegian comes out to $1,461 Canadian. If you're residing in the United States and you like that currency, that $10,000 fine translates to $1,210. We might as well say 1,211 just to round it up. And then euros, we're looking at 992 euros. So if you have two joints and you're getting fined 10, wow, those are two very expensive joints.
That's funny that you say that, Corey, because while in custody, and while that was a very unpleasant experience, I was in a really bad state of my life. I was struggling with serious drug-related problems. I was addicted to benzodiazepines, and this was a big low for me to experience this. And just add the fact that I was on my way to my therapist and my doctor that day, and I couldn't seek treatment that day because I was locked up in a tiny cell waiting for this fine. I actually made that joke to the police officers that because in Norway, cannabis is so expensive on the traditional market, as you taught me how to call it, Corey, that we sometimes or almost always mix it with tobacco. So I would say in a total, it was 0.7 grams of cannabis, which cost me, as you said, $1,211. And I said, that's the most expensive cannabis in the world. You're holding right now. Well, they didn't think it was funny. Well, I thought it was.
Oh man, that's hilarious.
I really love your humor and levity to the situation, and I'm glad that you told them that in that moment, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you gotta tell them somewhere. It really puts it into perspective when you say that's the most expensive two joints. You know, when we put into perspective how these fines are currently, and you know, I've seen it in other places as well, where I know people in Germany have had, you know, their grinder completely scraped out and that put on a scale, and if it comes to more than 0.1 of a gram, there's your 600 euro fine. You know, like I've had friends go through that, and it's like, wow, you know, to hear this with that much of a fine and what you went through, I'm shocked, and I'm honestly, thank you so much for sharing it though, Andre. Really, really appreciate it.
So the police thing is interesting. Coming from, you know, dealing with a lot of this political stuff and listening to both sides, whether I want to hear it or not, unfortunately, I'm not surprised by those comments, Andre. I remember vividly as I was listening to the Senate in Canada debate the C-45 cannabis legislation bill. There was one senator in particular from the province of Quebec, and he stated clearly that he did not want to support the legalization of cannabis because he did not want to support the destruction of this country. And so we still have those viewpoints here in Canada. You know, I've shared candidly about the first time when I went to one of the facilities, you know, in a smaller town where, you know, the person was more concerned about what my wife thought of me smelling like cannabis every day. And when I, you know, let him know that she also works in the facility with me, he was very surprised, to say the least. So I know even in a, you know, what most people would consider a progressive country for cannabis. I mean, we are a progressive country for cannabis. Let's not get it twisted. I often, quite naively think or forget that, you know, these are first world problems that I have up here in Canada as far as legalization is concerned. You know, when I hear these stories of people in Norway, you know, getting strip searched without any you know, proper evidence or proper, you know, policies, that it frustrates me so much. Yeah,
there's just no consent, right? There's no consent there. This is one thing that, like, what really got me, what you mentioned, Andre. This is where we see, you know, where we see people in the U.S. They're so educating about rights, and one thing, when you know, you're told not to talk to the police, you got to know your rights and what you're entitled to. And I feel like there's been a bit of a miss on that bat over in Scandinavia and Europe. It's like, in a general sense, we're not quite aware of the rights that we have to stand up for. And like you just mentioned, the way it is with the law in Norway, I'm reading it out here, is that you don't have rights as a citizen. You know, you're essentially your human rights are being violated, right? So this is kind of interesting when you have that written into the law of a country that's also subscribed to the UN code of whatever. So I'm like, wow.
Yeah, Andre, has there been any, you know, what is the equivalent in Norway of the charters and rights and freedoms like we have here in Canada? Is there any document that states that, you know, you guys have access to basic rights as Norwegian citizens? Or is there, you know, I'm very interested to kind of see where that parallel happens for you here. In Norway, if it is, because that's, you know, the route that we took here in Canada was our right to our liberty and our access to, you know, our medicine. So is there anything like that in Norway at all? Do you know offhand?
Well, yes. We do have a lot of rights, but I think that the general public are just not that interested in learning them or learning about them, because in general, a lot of people live safe, happy, everyday lives, and have this naive idea that the authorities are always to be trusted. And this, of course, it comes from the fact that in most cases, Norwegian authorities are to be trusted, but it doesn't mean that in all cases they are to be trusted. And especially when it comes to drug policies and politics, as we said earlier, there's not a lot of factual based policies within the field of illegal drugs or how to create policies in this field. And even us users of illegal drugs, we've almost always thought that police, they could do whatever they wanted to do, because why would they do it if they couldn't do it? The police have a good reputation. Police are trusted among the general population in Norway, which is a good thing. But at the same time, it really has shed a light that this is really something that we have to focus more on than we ever could have imagined, actually. And this is coming from the civil society working towards change. And I'm actually a part of a new organization. We can't remember the name. it's that recent. We had our first meeting last week, and it's basically just an organization that will create. Our sole purpose is to create a website that people can access and learn about their rights when they are using illegal drugs or are suspected of using illegal drugs. And this website will also provide easy access to complaining on police misconduct or misuse of power in old cases and in new cases. So it's been an eye-opener for us. And we have, of course, had state attorneys before this one, and they never saw anything wrong about the way the practice of the police and when it came to how they meet or engage with users of illegal drugs. So it's been an eye-opener, and it's also important that there is real political change now, and that the new state attorney is interpreting the law in the way that he is giving us these rights back, because they are rights we've always had, but the interpretations of these laws that provide us these rights have been different from what they are now. But long story short, or long answer short, we need to focus more on this going forward, definitely. And we are.
Awesome. Awesome. Thank you so much for that thing. You just touched on the point that you said at the end, and this is one thing I really wanted to ask, just to kind of see, you know, we've talked about so much and what's going on in Norway, what the situation is, especially on the rights and what you just mentioned with this website and educating the people about what rights they have. I think this is awesome. I just wanted to know, what kind of things have you got kind of in store for Norway? What are you planning out in the coming months, years? Where do you see Norway really going on the big scope of things in terms of legalization, decriminalization, medical cannabis, you know, the kind of things we've spoken about? You got an overall positive feeling for it, or you still got some doubts in there?
Well, there will always be some doubts. The fact that we haven't decriminalized yet proves that the doubts are founded in the way reality is right now in Norway. But at the same time, we've come a long way. Where this the debate about this reform has been mainstream, and it's been engaging almost all of society. And going forward, because we have a lot of different members of the civil society trying to affect drug politics. And we have our different opinions and different focus areas, as you would say. Going into the last couple of months, we've all aligned on the same spectrum, trying to make decriminalizing happen. But now, for normal, which one of our main purposes is to ensure a sensible way of regulating cannabis, and with the main idea that prohibition is not sensible. And I think that now that the debate about this drug policy reform has come to a end for now, we're going to focus more on cannabis politics, pushing more for legalization, working closely with the political parties that have now made it part of their official platform that they want some sort of regulating cannabis, legalizing. So we're going to push forward. It's election year this year. I don't know what type of traction the cannabis legalization debate will have, but maybe 5 years, 10 years, things will look a lot more positive in that aspect. But then again, you never know what happens next year or the year after, because if Germany suddenly makes big changes, or if Denmark suddenly were to do something major in the direction that we're pushing for, things could change really fast. Even if the USA legalizes on a federal level, or at least just decriminalizes and leaves it up to every state whether to make cannabis legal or not, things can happen fast. There's a snowball effect, and you never know when the next wave will hit the Norwegian shores of politics. But for now, we're trying to go back to our roots and talking more about legalizing, and of course making medicinal cannabis more accessible for those who need it.
Love it. Yeah, I just love it. It's exciting for me in a way, and that's why I love it, is because, you know, there's going to be a new generation of cannabis activists, you know, that you're trying to help along there. And so it's actually a fun fact. The first time I've ever been called a cannabis activist was by you, Andre. And I actually feel great about it. it's very interesting. And so it's really made me think about, you know, what is an activist and what, you know, we can do to support people, because I think that generally activist has a negative connotation sometimes, but I think that in our role where we're from, that it's a very good thing. And so I think that's the important part as well, is you know, I know you've expressed with me before that things are taking a long time. Things are taking a long time. And I also like the point that you do, you know, have that kind of viewpoint of it might take 5 to 10 years at the same time, you know, based on the, you know, factual events that are happening. So I'm happy to hear about your flexibility with the situation over there. I think that there are a lot of folks in your position or that have organizations like this that kind of, you know, drop the ball in that way. They really become what you would say too stubborn or too hard-headed. So I believe that there's some flexibility here from what I'm hearing. And I think that's going to be really vital and important to trying to win. So, you know, I hope that Normal can continue to become more efficient. I know there's always better ways and more efficient ways to do things. So I'm going to be, you know, watching closely. And as I said, prior to you, prior with you is, you know, anything that, you know, I can do or any people we can find to help you guys over there, guys and girls over there, please, you know, I'm really excited to see things move forward in a positive way. And, you know, I just wanted to take that moment to kind of acknowledge what you've been doing over there and, you know, trying to move things in a forward manner, because I think all of us in this room, you know, even everybody in the audience here in Clubhouse can personally, you know, tell a story about how kind of down we felt sometimes with cannabis, whether it's been a family member that's stigmatized for us or, you know, could be one of our partners that we're with. You know, we've always had that kind of strange feeling where we don't feel so good about it. So I just wanted to also, you know, again, acknowledge that and let you know that, you know, keep on doing what you're doing. I know it's an exhausting fight, and I can't wait to see what you guys can do in a better format to really push things forward at a greater rate than you're doing already. So thanks for taking the time with us today, man. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure coming on. Happy to come on again to talk more about this. These important topics, and I really appreciate you offering to provide resources and things that can help boost our process. We certainly need it. Anything within this research field will always be of benefit, even though we had the research on our side in the debate on decriminalizing illegal drug use. It changed a lot of minds. That the fact that the research was on our side, and it's always a pleasure to bring out new research, especially from Canada, because it's a country that Norway likes to compare itself to. We have similar values and are very close in the political spectrum in many other cases, and it's also nice to again reassure Norwegian skeptics that the society in Canada is still functioning and hasn't broken down just because people who consume cannabis finally can do it legally. So that's always appreciated. And again, it's been a pleasure coming on, and happy to come on again.
I'm just going to jump in here, Andre. Thank you so much for everything you are doing in Norway. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure I can talk on behalf of the rest of the Stoners back home in Norway. We really appreciate it, and thank you so much for taking your time.
Thank you so much, and thank you also for the great work you guys are doing, and you too, Øystein. It's always nice to talk to fellow compatriots within the cannabis activist movement.
Absolutely have to support each other, and if it's anything we can help out with, we are here. And we also have to, I'm going to write you a message afterwards, have some research you should look into.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Now, I know we're a little bit past the hour mark here, but this is a really good discussion that we're having. I don't know if you have too much more time, Andre, but if there's anybody in the audience down here, on Clubhouse that would like to ask a question. Is it okay if you take a couple if the audience has them?
For sure, for sure.
Awesome. So anybody down there, if you'd like to ask a question here for Andre Nilsen, the chairman of Normal Norway, or Normal Norge, we have been talking about some really crazy things, to say the least. And, you know, really appreciate you taking the time. I know, again, a little bit longer than we usually go, but I think this is an extremely important conversation. And I know there are quite a few people over in the wonderful country of Norway that are listening to us here. So I know that this is going to be very helpful to them.
Hello, my name is Sam. I am from here in Canada. I also live on the West Coast. I specialize in quality, and I wanted to expand a little bit from the Canadian perspective about how cannabis influences driving. If you are interested, I recently wrote a little piece, and through my investigation, I found that cannabis, although cannabis does alter your ability to drive, I think it was in Saskatchewan at the University of Saskatchewan, that it ended up being less aggressive drivers who overestimated their intoxication, so to speak. So if you had pure cannabis, you ended up being a safer driver relatively to people on any other sort of substance, and that through the metrics of Canadian consumption, so if you look at Canadian cannabis in 2019, which was our first full year of legalization, compared to every other type of drug, there was very little to almost no impact. Every person who was pulled over for cannabis intoxication was also drunk or on some other type of drug. And so people who take this cannabis and view it as some sort of end of the world scenario and is going to create a new era of dangerous driving, don't comprehend how dangerous alcohol already represents in this society. And if alcohol is okay, it's not okay to drink and drive. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying that the risks that are already there, the dangers that are already there, the amount of consumption in Canada, which through alcohol is already represents to driving, and we know that prohibition doesn't work with alcohol. There's no reason that prohibition will work with cannabis when cannabis is safer than alcohol while driving. My name is Sam, and I'm done speaking.
Thank you, Sam. I really, really appreciate that. And yeah, Andre as well, if you want to reach out, or Sam, reach out for Andre and get that that information over. I always think it's great when we have new kind of evaluations of the data that we've had over the years. And one thing that you brought to my attention there, Sam, was also the fact that a lot of these studies, where over the past number of years, the conclusion has been taken that cannabis intoxication while driving leads to higher impairment or more issues. Out of all of these studies, it was never cannabis alone. It was, like you said, Sam, cannabis along with alcohol, cannabis mixed with other drugs and substances. And it always turned out that cannabis was actually the lesser quantity of substance in the user system at the time. So it was never the primary cause of, let's say, you know, we can't obviously say that, but throughout all this data, cannabis has always just been muddled in there and kind of labeled that cause, even though we haven't really looked at it, you know, factually and really evaluated all the evidence. So I think this is something really interesting when we say that, you know, we have a lot of research out there. It's like, we really got to go and look at how this research was done and how the conclusions were reached in this research, because that's something that has an impact on the kind of myths and beliefs that we have today in the legal system. So yeah, thank you so much for bringing that to attention, Sam.
First and foremost, I think that Finland and Germany, both countries have stepped away from taking the driver's license away from users based on new research, but I've never actually been able to find which research and or to confirm that this has in fact happened. So if anybody knows, please give a shout out and let me know. And to comment on these studies, people getting car accidents and people who consume cannabis will from time to time also getting car accidents. And if you consume more drugs, I would guess the likelihood of you getting into an accident increases. When it comes to many users or consumers that I've spoken to, people say that when they smoke cannabis, it makes them a better driver because they are less prone to taking risks in traffic. And I would say this is a fairly subjective take on the matter, and probably an over exaggeration of their driving abilities while affected on cannabis, while under the influence of cannabis. But what I've heard also is that for inexperienced users, cannabis can lower your abilities, or you can compare it to driving in the dark. You're still able to do it. It's just not as easy as it would be if it was daytime. And that's how they compare the effects on driving in inexperienced users. And I also heard that if you have a tolerance for cannabis, it's not a significant change in your driving ability. I think this is something that has to be raised on a political level and create awareness around the fact that the laws in Norway and many other places around the world are based on non-factual assessments.
I think I'm just going to add to that as well, Andre. I think what it really comes in and what is important on this one is when we start to consider the medical cannabis patients, right? Because let's say you have medical cannabis patients who are using cannabis to treat their anxiety or to treat PTSD or to treat, let's say, tremors and shakes that happen because of MS. And these are actually the things that cannabis helps them with and maybe enables their mobility in life, right? Maybe this actually helps them drive, because otherwise they'd be way too anxious and they'd have PTSD and panic attacks and they actually can't go about this. So this is a really, really interesting thing. Like you say, this needs to be brought to attention on that political level. And I think one really great way to start it and to look at it is for the sake of the medical cannabis patients, because these are, like you said, experienced users. And in many cases, I'm sure if we did some research on it, we'd find that these are actually the patients that cannabis really helps lead that normal life. So I think this is a really, really interesting topic to be touching on.
And I just wanted to mention really quickly about obtaining this data from the Canadian government. It's extremely difficult to do. Very difficult. And so I just wanted to... also just say, in order for us, because I saw a comment on the video there, Andre, about, really good question. Where do we spend our tax dollars from cannabis for this? And it is actually extremely difficult to find here in Canada. I'm actually going to complete something called a Freedom of Information Act request from the government for them to tell us this. So very weird.
Yeah, that's very interesting to hear. And looking forward to the day you get a hold on these documents.
Let's take a quick second. Say what's up, Jared. I was going to welcome Anna as well to the stage. She just popped down to the audience, but do come up again if you have a question. It's absolutely no problem. Jared, what's up, my man? How are you doing today?
Nothing much, buddy. I was just calling, just checking in. I saw y'all were on. I love the conversation. I just wanted to point out the fact that the government has the patent on these cannabis compounds as therapeutic value. So I'm wondering how this is all going to tie together in the future anyway. So America has, the U.S. government has patents on CBD and THC and all these different compounds going back as far as 2004. So, as we begin to try to patent or try to use these methodologies, at any point the government's going to come in and say, hey, wait, you can't do that. And that's what I'm really kind of nervous about. They're giving us all this rope to go hang ourselves. And then they're slowly trying to take us out of the markets. And then they ultimately have the patent on a thing that they're saying that we can't even do. So it's like, it's all confusing to me. Where the future really goes is wherever the government decides they're going to allow us to go.
This is where we have the interesting thing that Andre pointed out earlier, where we have Norway that seems to be, in a more positive light, or seeing things in a more positive aspect when we look at the developments in places like Canada, when we look at places like Germany. But I kind of wanted to ask Andre is, what about what's going on in the US and how does that relate to Norway? Are you guys seeing the slow wave of legalization across the states have an impact in Norway as well?
I mean, yes. the United States are the architects, the main architects behind the war on drugs, and to have the motherland of the war on drugs slightly fall to better ways of treating people who use and consume cannabis is definitely a big boost from Norway's perspective, and for other countries, I would say, as well. I think the big push also comes from popular culture in America. I'm not saying that Netflix shows make people smoke weed, but I've seen the trend that it's more spoken openly and freely about in, well, music. It's been a long time, but also in movies and on TV shows. It's no longer the main plot of the story when the characters are smoking a joint. They just happen to smoke a joint instead of having a glass of wine. And I think this, it helps break stigma and create more openness within the Norwegian culture as well. So definitely we're looking at the states with big anticipation. Will they legalize on a federal level? Will they decriminalize on a federal level? These are very important and interesting things to look at. And also, New York is a city where many Norwegians like to go on vacation. To have the city of New York legalizing cannabis will also help change people's opinions and minds in Norway. There's no doubt about it.
How did the Netflix show Murder Mountain, have y'all seen that one? Is that kind of the one you were talking about, or is there other shows that that are out there?
I think, yeah, Murder Mountain was consumed by those who, I would say, those who already appreciate and approve of cannabis use. Now I'm talking more about other shows, more mainstream shows. I can't really think of a particular one at the time being, but it's a shift when you see main characters consuming cannabis, and it's not the plot of the story. You know, with propaganda back in the day, you, smoking a joint would be the plot, and the character would go into psychosis or become a drug-using criminal the day after. But now it's more relaxed. It just happens to happen there. And well, I believe didn't Seth Rogen have this food show where he smoked a joint and went on a Munchies marathon for a couple of episodes? I mean, stuff like that really helps to break the stigma. I would say Cooking with Cannabis was probably not the best show to break the stigma, if anyone's seen that show.
That's interesting that you messaged that, or interesting that you mentioned that. Sorry, apologies. Yeah, there's, I can't remember the show as well, but it's about this train, and the world is in this deep freeze, and this train is going around and around, a perpetual motion train. And every single scene in that show, instead of drinking alcohol, there's a joint being smoked. It's very, very cool. Snowpiercer, I think it's called. So I, you know, really do agree with you there, Andre. I think that it's very interesting to see, you know, these kind of, I guess, socially acceptable. I mean, everyone, even, I mean, yesterday I watched the OG Ghostbusters movie, you know, with the crew. And every single time they're walking through the Ghostbusters office, I couldn't help but notice that they were smoking a cigarette. And, you know, it just totally different times. So I think that, I agree. I think that helps. I really do appreciate that question, Jared, about asking that difference between, you know, shows like Murder Mountain, or, you know, maybe something like Disjointed, for example, you know, having a different connotation and trying to, you know, normalize that use of cannabis for everybody. So with that, we need to close this out, boys and girls. This has been a wonderful conversation. Mr. Andre, we're definitely going to keep in touch. You're going to have to be on her a couple of more times, possibly for 5 to 10 years at the sound of things over there. But I think it's going to be important for us to, you know, keep an ear to the ground of what's happening over there and to have these open discussions so that we can help each other out and really get over, you know, some of these hurdles that we're looking at. So before, you know, close out the podcast for the day, Andre, where can all of the beautiful people that are listening here on Spotify, Apple, or Google, or the wonderful human beings that are down here in the audience on Clubhouse, how do they get in touch with you? Please, you know, plug the socials so that we can continue to move this wheel forward, my friend.
Thank you so much. Can't wait to be on for the next 5 to 10 years and probably after, because we're still going to have things to criticize the government on even after legalization. And thanks again for having me on. This was a really pleasurable experience. People can get in touch with me on basically every social media platform, on Instagram, on TikTok, on Facebook, on Twitter. I think most of my links are in my bio here on Clubhouse. My TikTok name is in my bio, and links to Twitter and Instagram is also in my bio here. So yeah, follow me here, and can't wait to keep this wheel rolling and to stay in touch with you guys as well. It's been a pleasure coming on.
No worries. Can you spell at least one of those social media handles for folks who are on Spotify and can't click your profile here on Clubhouse, my friend?
For sure, for sure. I forgot that we were actually recording this for other platforms. It's Andre Nilsson, AndreNilsen. And on TikTok, it's the same, Andre Nilsson 420. And on Clubhouse, it's Andre Nilsson 420.
Beautiful. Andre, I really appreciate it again. This has been a fantastic episode of The Cannabis Maker. I am excited to get this out to the people. As always, for those who are down in the crowd here on Clubhouse, there's a greenhouse at the top. The Cannabis Maker Club, please give us a follow so you can get notified of awesome episodes that we have upcoming. We've got a full slate here on Clubhouse. We have 3 more shows this week. Monday was just the beginning, boys and girls. We have Tuesday, we have Thursday, and we have Friday. I mean, I'm really excited to get this content out to you folks. So please follow that greenhouse at the top there. If you like what's being said on this stage, Andre and Mr. Jerry Boudreau from Lost Coast Wellness, please give them a follow. And if you like the entire stage that's been going on here, there are 3 green buttons, the moderators, Oyston, Liam, and myself, Corey, please give us a follow. And with that, I hope you all stay high, stay happy, and I will see you in the hallways and rooms of Clubhouse. Thank you very much, everybody.
This episode of the Cannabis Maker Podcast is brought to you by Lost Coast Wellness, based out of Humboldt County, California. Grow your own medical cannabis according to your DNA. Visit lostcoastwellness.com for more information about their event retreat from the 30th of July to the 1st of August. Use promo code CannabisMaker for a $25 discount on in-person packages and promo code VirtualMaker for a $10 discount on virtual packages. Lost Coast Wellness. Products from certified organic hemp, free from THC, pesticides, and solvents. Visit their Instagram or website for more information today. LostCoastWellness.com. Lost Coast Wellness.